Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. This is a conversation you're going to want to hear. We've recorded this as part of a series we're going to be putting out on AI and coaching. Of course, this is such a big topic. It's everywhere right now. And our intention is to be a living part of this conversation as this technology is deployed in the world and as it's deployed in the field of coaching. As Valerie, one of the guests on today's show, will share, we need to be engaging in this conversation. It's crucial right now. So today I am joined by two guests. I'm joined by Karim Hirani, who is the learning architect at Coaches Rising. He's also working with companies who are deploying AI coaching in their organizations. He's going to join me in an interviewing role and share some of his experiences. I'm also joined by Valerie Pisano. Valerie is the CEO of Mila, which is an artificial intelligence institute, and it's really at the forefront of connecting with governmental organizations, with leading researchers and scientists, and with the companies deploying this technology. So as Valerie described herself, she's really a translator of what's unfolding in the field, an articulate and passionate translator. So this conversation is really a window into what is unfolding around the world with AI and technology. We'll get right into what are some of the central concerns we should be having right now. What are the deep ethical considerations we should be having? How will this technology impact leadership? How will this technology transform who we are as human beings? And of course, we'll get right into how will this technology impact our work as coaches? Valerie has some very clear things to say about this. As Valerie shares, we are in a crucial time frame right now, and there are specific conversations we need to be having on a collective level. For me, I couldn't be happier with this conversation. I think it's a conversation as a coach you need to listen to. And we'll be bringing more out in this series with thought leaders in this field. I'm really excited about it. So that all being said, let's dive right in. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey, so I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So Valerie, it's wonderful to be with you today. And actually, I should say, Valerie and Karim, we're trying a new format out for this series on AI and coaching. So how are you both doing today? How are you, Valerie?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very passionate about this conversation and looking forward to having it with two amazing coaches and humans.
Yeah, great. Karim, you also are joining us, and of course you work with Coaches Rising as well. Could you just sort of say hello and maybe just say a little bit about who you are in a sentence?
Yeah. So I'm doing well. I think we've just checked in and I feel some of that passion, Valerie. So looking forward to our conversation. So yeah, I'm a learning architect at Coaches Rising and also leading some AI and coaching in another role. So yeah, looking forward to the conversation.
So this is the first conversation we're recording in this series about AI and coaching. And it's a huge topic, of course. It's, you know, it's one of the biggest topics in my friendship groups and in my news feeds. And so We're aiming to help kind of make sense of what's unfolding through these conversations. There's many different perspectives to take in and consider. And of course, things are changing so quickly anyway. But so I'm really excited about this. And I think, Valerie, the first thing I'd love to ask you to do is just in a, couple of sentences, just say, like, you're CEO of Mila. Could you just say what Mila's up to and your role?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mila is a very young organization. I was brought in 6 years ago. So we're a six-year-old organization, but built on decades of vision and investment in AI in Canada. So a lot of what's happening today in the world, actually, the roots of it are Canadian. So it's kind of an interesting little side fact. Mila was founded by someone called Yoshua Bengio. So that name is starting to be familiar. He was just recently named one of the 100 most influential people in the world. But most importantly, he's one of the three people who are generally recognized as being the creators, the godfathers, the inventors of AI. And a year ago, pretty much, he became very, very, very concerned by the track that we're on. So Mila is a non-for-profit organization. We have a community of 1,400 researchers, one of whom is Yoshua Bengio. And as such, basically, you could summarize, we do one of three things. We do research in AI. So this science, this technology is still relatively young and evolving and emerging. We work with organizations who want to adopt AI, who are thinking about, like, what is the intersection with my industry, my products, my services, the topics I'm passionate about. And then the third is this growing conversation around the governance of AI and participating in a democratic debate around, okay, full stop, time out. What kind of relationship do we want to have with this technology, and who gets to decide how that's going to happen or come into our lives in the next, months and years? So that's Mila, in a very summarized version. It's a fantastic group of people at a very important point in time in history.
And so I'm sure we'll get into some of those concerns, but something you said as we were just checking in really struck me, which was, you were saying, like, this is the greatest transition of our century. And, we're going to be the first generation of leaders who have to deal with this. No one else has been through this before. So could you just sort of paint the picture of this transition we're in or we're about to go through? Like, where are we at in that transition? And what are you expecting is going to unfold?
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say that 2023, when we look back, will have been the pivot point, kind of a point of no return. There is no going back to pre-AI, pre-generative AI. Today is the worst technology will ever be. Looking into the future, it's kind of interesting to take it from that perspective. And Amy Webb is someone I've been kind of engaging with. So she's the founder of the Future Today Institute. Someone worth kind of being curious about. And she's the one who kind of framed it this way. She said, we're the generation, we, you, I, all of us, and in particular leaders, we're the generation of this great transition. AI is already in many spheres of our lives. It will be in literally every sphere of our life. But more importantly, it will deeply transform how we interact with each other, with our jobs, with our communities, with basically every single point of contact we have. And so the next couple of years really are the moments in time where we need to make these choices, where we need to come together and do the work, I guess is the expression that I want to offer. Like, we can't just wing this or let it happen to us. There really is maybe a 5 to 10 year window where we as humankind, and in particular, I think the responsibility and privilege of leaders, need to wrestle with this. Like, how do we want this technology to be of service? And how do we make sure it goes in the direction of connecting us and helping us learn and grow and make beautiful scientific discoveries and improve our life versus creating something that could be potentially very harmful or destructive even?
I'd love to ask you on the back of that, Valerie, because you've highlighted the polarity there. I'm really curious about what are your hopes and fears given, those three areas around you know, governance and organizations, leadership, et cetera. You know, what are your fears? What do you set at night, think about, worry about, but also get excited about and hopeful about?
Yeah, the potential of this technology is so beautiful and momentous that pretty much anything that's dear to your heart, there is a path to how this technology would help. Whether it's discrimination, whether it's the climate crisis, whether it's inequality, whether it's preventing diseases or helping people who are sick have a better quality of life, it really has tremendous potential, which basically means it's a dual use technology. So for every person who will wake up in the morning thinking about how do I use this technology for good, the light side, there's going to be someone that will wake up in the morning thinking about how can I use this technology to serve an agenda of harm and an agenda of disinformation, of polarization of or concentration of power, polarization of communities and society. And certainly this is not my area of expertise, but if you look at the state of the world today, you know, just in the newspaper, we have those polarities emerging all the time. So that's our greatest concern at a moment in which, you know, democratic institutions and international collaboration of democratic institution is fragilized or fragile. So that's why I say there's actual real muscle work that needs to happen in the next few years. Part of it is scientific, and that's where Yashua is focusing his effort and his advocacy. We need to work on the science that will guarantee that these systems are safe. And then part of it is really diplomacy, is having these, you know, boring, not glamorous in an office conversations or in meeting conversations around, okay, what is happening? What are we worried about? What do we want? How do we make these decisions? How do we work together? And that happens at the micro level of a group of leaders in an organization and at the macro level of world leaders coming together, as they are, by the way, this week at the AI CEO conference, again, engaging on all of the topics that we'll be talking about today.
Yeah. Wow. I have so many openings. I know. But if I follow my thread here a little bit, because you talked about the leaders coming together, and I see a lot of positive action. I see the AI Act. I see, you know, organizations talking about collaborating around policies that could well be global. And then I look at some of the bad actors who we don't have control over. And I think something I wanted to ask you about was, you know, when you say, you know, with the science, you can guarantee safety. But then there's this kind of black box of AI that I see where people aren't understanding how it's starting to think on its own two feet. You know, it's kind of starting to go in directions we can't predict. So is there a science that can help with that and not get in the hands of people who could then take it into directions that are very harmful?
Yeah, so as I'm sure everyone appreciates, this is a really complex situation. Mm-hmm. So there are many pieces to the puzzle. Mm-hmm. One of it is reducing access of, you know, to the technology by bad players. And that's basically your regulation governance piece.
Right.
You know, okay. Right. And that's kind of, we could compare it to a lot of other powerful technologies or tools. And, you know, there's restriction. You need licenses or you need to be registered. And there are conditions through which you can use these technologies. And if you use them for harm, there are consequences. By the way, that's maybe the scariest part of all of this. We've yet to make tech companies accountable for anything. Yeah. Right now we have ample evidence of negative consequences of, you know, online platforms, social media, and it's no one's fault and no one's taking accountability for that. And the path to making things better is kind of in this void that we've all collectively accepted. Everything that's digital and online is just, it belongs to everyone, so it belongs to no one, and you can do what you want with it. The scientific part is a bit trickier. So, and that's also both the hope and the scary part. Today, we don't understand and we can't guarantee that the systems that are being developed and deployed won't do things that we don't want them to do. It's what's called the alignment problem.
Yeah.
And by the way, as someone who doesn't come from tech, so I'm an economist by training, I worked in human capital and leadership for most of my life before becoming CEO of Mila. Like, just don't be scared of AI. It's really not that complicated. And the part that's complex or complicated isn't the part we need to worry about. So for example, the alignment problem is something we should all be curious about. We should, you know, whether it's reading a paragraph or a book, but we need to understand, what is it about these systems that we're not sure we can control? This is something we need to take kind of joint accountability for. So today, the companies building these systems aren't working on kind of the mechanics that would ensure the system always behaves the way we want it to behave. What it does is it creates a system, or an environment for the system to learn, and it learns. And then it tests it. And when it does something bad, it says, oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that, right? It's what we call the human reinforcement loop, or the reinforcement learning loop. Right. Now, that's working relatively okay for now. And there are ample stories of moments where it doesn't go okay. And it's going to reach its limits. So it has to happen, but it will reach its limits. Researchers like Yashua Benjo think part of what we need to be doing is investing a bit less in building, you know, these really powerful, capable systems, and a bit more in the security and safety aspect of these systems, which is a science that really, up to this date, not a lot of people were that interested in. So there is a path towards designing these systems in a way that would be kind of guaranteed, but we don't know how to do that. So today we do not know how to do that. And that's part of the challenge with the speed at which everything is happening right now.
Yeah, because I've heard that the this is the fastest we're ever moving with AI, and it will never be this slow, you know, so it's just going to keep going. And just on that first point, I'm just going to follow this thread, Joel, because there's a couple of questions around this that I was thinking about. So the attention that needs to move from this kind of more retrospective, we'll learn as we go, to it sounds like embedding some principles in the creation of the AI in the first place, so that it does behave well. That's what Yoshua is shooting for. Is that happening in practice, or what is, you know, and are other governments in alignment? Because I think the global nature of this needs to be aligned if we're going to have a positive overall impact. Just a curiosity around that.
Yeah. It's starting to happen would be a better answer. So up until recently, the research on the alignment question, really the only place where you had the resources to do it was within the big tech companies. Mm-hmm. Now, on the bad side of this, or on the sad side of this, just this week, OpenAI announced that they're disbanding the team that was working on the alignment questions. And their two top researchers who were concerned about these questions have quit the company. So put that on in the bucket of, that's not good. On the good side of things, you have researchers like Professor Yashua Benjo, topmost researcher in the world, who's ready to pivot all of his work, science, knowledge, conviction, passion towards this question. And he's starting to mount an effort and bringing people together so that outside of tech, outside of the incentives of a private company, but more in service of humankind, so in collaboration with governments, you're starting to look at these questions. It's a massive research endeavor that could be compared to other types of, you know, multilateral government-led, government-sponsored research initiatives where the private incentives aren't there, but collectively we would all really gain from this kind of work. So it's starting to happen. And certainly in the last year, you've seen a very rapid acceleration of leading nations across the world taking leadership, coming together, having conversations. Sometimes I wonder if we had been this fast to react to researchers raising their hand about climate change, where we would be today, a decade later, right? But so that's on the good side of things, or on the positive and hopeful side of things, these conversations are happening. As I said, they're happening now. There are hundreds of people right now in Seoul, meeting to talk about AI, and namely about these security and safety questions. So,
okay. And I see you doing that with your hands, the kind of either or, because what I notice, if I bring another lens that I'm experiencing, is, you know, on the one hand, there's this kind of ethical conscious, let's be good about this to humanity happening. And then in reality, I see these tables where ChatGPT is compared to Claude, and who's got the, you know, the most powerful and the most significant, impactful large language model. And then suddenly it becomes about the kind of capitalist competitive mode of operating, and then ethics kind of get thrown out the window in that moment for me. And so I really hear that dilemma, and I come back to when I see human beings playing with it, that need to be first, better, faster, you know, sometimes feels like it can override the, hey, let's stop, which, you know, I know when you talked about the future of life and the letter, I believe you signed that letter as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just for those listening, it's the letter that said, can we put a pause on AI? But that didn't have much impact. So I worry that, yes, there's some good stuff going on, but the human desire to win in our current model of the world, one, I think needs to be challenged. And is that going to be challenged? And two, is it going to be challenged enough in time? So just, yeah, some thoughts there.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's a beautiful way of framing it. So they're doing exactly what the system we've designed encourages them to do,
yes,
which is be innovative, push product, respond to client or customer, you know, needs, desires, and compete to do it in a, you know, productive way. So that's the world, you know, Meta, Google, OpenAI, Microsoft, that's the world they're in. And, you know, for now, that's the world we've all chosen. We wanted to be a part of. So how do you counterbalance that?
Yeah.
Certainly there's a big role for government, and kudos to President Joe Biden, who signed a very bold executive order just before Christmas in November. So, like, again, our governments are, you know, at the table having these conversations, pushing as much as they can. The US last week announced a new framework for AI, massive investments, legislation. Like there's a will.
Okay, that's really.
And governments don't move as fast as companies like Google and Microsoft. Yeah. It's just like there's no way in hell they're going to be able to go at that speed, which was the idea behind the timeout. Now, between government and company, there's us, the citizens of the world, the billions of people who on a daily basis need to make the choice of who do I vote for, government piece, and then the choice of what technology do I engage with, when, to do what, and if you're a leader, how do I, in addition to my personal kind of thinking and wrestling with this, how do I want to bring this or not to my organization, at what speed, to do what kind of task?
Yeah.
So there is a lot of agency beyond the tech companies and governments. We just need to step up to the moment. And I think that's what hopefully 2024 will be a bit more about. More people being curious, being literate, hopefully a bit of the slowing down. I'm not sure that's what's happening. I think a lot of people right now have either, it's been positioned to me as either fear. So I don't know, understand this thing. I don't know how to engage with it, or fear of missing out. I have to engage with it as quickly as possible. Someone else told me they're doing that in their company, so I'm going to be doing that also in my company without taking the full, like, is that really what we want our relationship to? Like, how does that fit with our values, our mission? Or there's a real moment of choice here. It's not because we can that we should. And so,
And Valerie, then that's the heart of where I think my gut was going with the question is, it requires a real shift in relationship, you know, and both relationship to us and this technology, because it's us creating that future, which segues beautifully into the leadership question and even the, you know, to coaches who coach these leaders. Like, how do we support leaders to be conscious? And what's the role of coach here, you know, leadership consultants? Because it, you know, certainly if I connect back to what we're doing at Coaches Rising, there's a lot around how do we elevate consciousness to not be caught by those tendencies and patterns that we're brought up in and that are in culture to go after things and to win, but to really come back to our humanity, our heart, our conscious selves, and then make choices in this moment of choice that's so critical to humanity. So I'm wondering, I know you've got a leadership background as well as being a leader at Miele. So I'm just curious, what would you say to coaches, leadership consultants at this time to support leaders facing these very critical choices?
Yeah, I kind of, so without surprise, the intersection between leadership and leading people in the world and AI is one that I'm particularly attuned to, both in my role as CEO, but because of some of the things I've been privy to in the last decade. And recently I was meeting with highly ranked government officials in Canada, and we did our presentation around the opportunities and the risks, and then, you know, all their hands shot up and they all had questions, right? And like ranging from how do we stop this to how quickly can I deploy it in the health system, for example.
Yeah.
And I just had a moment of deep, deep, deep compassion for them. Like none of them signed up for this. None of them signed up for being the first ever, you know, senior leader, whatever the title is, responsible for thinking about this and making the good choices about it. And the good choices meaning not being the last one to adopt a technology that could, in this case, potentially really serve our citizens and help us as a nation, or on the other side, getting it wrong and what's going to be the cost of that. Wow. Wow. So I had a bit of a moment of dizziness for them. And then we kind of engage in, you know, let's take it in, you know, one piece at a time. And it's okay also to take our time in the face of this much complexity. So the simplest answer to your question is, I think everything that the field of leadership and coaching already stands for, which is clarity within ourselves, to serve as a space and a container and a source of light and, you know, again, of kind of orientation in this rapidly accelerating complex environment is fundamental. And so part of the answer is just more of what we already do. In fact, when we were catching up, we were saying, I think this field is one of the fields that's going to benefit from AI. I think more people are going to need the human connection of, can I have a full stop from this crazy world that I'm in as a parent, as a member of my community, as a leader? And I just need to talk about how I'm feeling, my anxiety, my excitement, my failure, because this is an environment that's completely new. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. I'd love to, yeah, I think that's really helpful to touch into this for the audience listening. And might be a surprising answer, because I think a lot of coaches maybe have veered, and humanity in general, on the side of like, is this going to replace the work that I do, or how will it impact the general, you know, workplace in general? Like, how is it going to change the face of work? I think we'll go in that direction a bit more. I want to ask you, actually, if you could just say a little bit more about what do you think leaders should consider? You started to kind of give that, you know, that general, like, yeah, how do I go in? Do I go in quickly? Do I wait? What do you think are the important considerations for leaders right now? In a sense, like, what attitude might you recommend taking towards AI?
Yeah, so it would be very pretentious of me to think I have the answer to this question right now. So I'll offer a few reactions more than an answer. The first is what we were saying a few minutes ago. Every single one of us who care about the future of humankind on Earth need to get smart about what's happening, what this means, what are the choices, and what is the agency that we have. Like, this is not a moment in time where we can just, I'm not a tech person, I'll just, you know, whatever happens. So personal commitment to this, to participating at this moment in time in this conversation, in all, you know, whatever that means, I think that's kind of step one. So what we could, if we wanted to put one word on it, we'd call it like education or awareness, right? There's a second piece where within organizations, I think there is something that can and should be designed immediately, which is, if this is as important as it seems to be, who are the people who are waking up every morning thinking about this? And what are the spaces where we're having the conversations about this, right? So, you know, who is leading my talent and technology? Because it's both, right? It's not one or the other. And in our executive meetings or in our management meetings, how are we engaging with this topic? Are we doing it, you know, for 10 minutes in an agenda that's jam-packed with operational stuff and decisions we need to make on a daily basis? Or is there a special space that's crafted around, let's call it the transition, right? Transition management. What does it mean for us? What are our competitors doing? How would this serve our mission and values? Like, what's the exciting part of this? Where would we want to put our own boundaries? Of course we can put our own boundaries, as we have on many other things as world leaders. So But that conversation needs a space. You know, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, you know, the difference between complicated and complex. Like you don't talk about AI the way you would talk about your supply chain. You have to talk about it a bit differently. So I do think there's something for leaders around who are the people that I'm having this conversation with in my leadership role, and where and how are we having these conversations? Because you certainly probably want to be having those conversations. Mm-hmm. And then my last thought, which is still emerging, but I think the next year or two should not be one of rapid adoption. So the FOMO, I think, is a very slippery slope. I think the next year or two should be seen as one of starting to build a relationship, experimentation, piloting. And so I certainly think we should be engaging. That's the world we're going towards. And I do think it's healthy to start that engagement sooner than later. But I try to scope it in a way that allows for the learning, allows for the slowing down, allows for the questioning. So if you think about, for example, AI in healthcare, mm-hmm. huge mammoth, mm-hmm. you know, can we take one or two smaller parts of that that are maybe a bit less risky, a bit easier to play with, a bit lower stake, and then, you know, create these spaces, these talent teams, these multidisciplinary teams who will be working on this and then draw our learnings so that a year or two or three from now, we're ready, right? So it's more about readiness and again, starting the engagement than about adopting, winning. I'd be careful about those mindsets. And there's certainly some that are prevalent right now, especially in organizations outside of tech who are very much in the market dynamic of my competitors are doing this. You know, 3 months from now, we need to present our results to investors. Mm-hmm. We need to be showing that we're advancing on our AI roadmap. But that's not the prerogative of everyone. Not everyone has to be in that dynamic.
How do you see that, Kareem? Because I know you're working with the deployment of AI in coaching in larger organizations. Yeah. Do you see that kind of attitude there? Is it more like we just got to go all in as fast as we can?
Yeah. You've named it really beautifully, Valerie. It's good. Because I see the mindset of FOMO, get there first, what's our competitor, we better beat them, otherwise we're going to lose revenue, and that kind of more survival threat and pace is quite present. I think what you're bringing is the beginnings of what I'm seeing as a, what's our responsibility here? How do we do this in a measured way? How do we think about what's good, you know, in the highest sense of the word? I'm not seeing it enough because the threat is driving the mm-hmm. agenda more is what I'm experiencing. I'm working at a consultancy and, you know, it's quite successful and it's getting, you know, very exciting. And there's a lot of excitement. This is something Joel and I have talked about because there's also, amongst all of that, there is an absolute fascination about this mysterious AI thing, you know, that can do so many things for us now and in the next few years. And I think there's also that fascination to go, how can we make use of it? So that's also another spirit I'm seeing in there is fascination as well as, you know, a bit of how do we make more out of this and win our competitors, but only the beginnings of that you know, more conscious place. And I see the place of coaching, as you say, leadership development to create those kind of, as mm-hmm. I think Robert Wheatley talks about this, islands of sanity to go, oh, I need to take a breath. But in reality, it's not enough yet. I wonder if this situation is inviting us to do more of that, because you're saying it, I feel it. You know, is this the opportunity to say we can't go with that old operating system? It's going to drive us into some very dark places if we don't stop to think, you know, and we've got some evidence that that can happen. So I do wonder if this is the time to keep calling that out, the importance of consciousness and measuredness and care, you know, compassion, all of that. So, yeah, I wonder if this is a golden moment in time. I'm curious about your thoughts about that as well.
Yes, that certainly resonates. Like on the light side of this, what a beautiful, wondrous moment to be in a leadership role, right? And to be able to architect such a big transition for humankind, really, for all of us, you know, coming into a world where we're going to be engaging in a dynamic, personalized way with data, with information, with knowledge. There are so many areas where, when you think about what AI will make possible, it's wonderful. It's absolutely what, like, just education, are, you know, making it more accessible, more personalized. I have three kids. None of them come even close to learning the same way. Like, how excited am I that, you know, they're going to engage in a world that is much more responsive to who they are, how they think, how they perceive things, right?
Yeah,
I think it's really taking ownership. And this is kind of the responsibility piece, that this is a transition, one that will impact human beings, one that could go in many directions. So anyone who thinks right now there's only one path, I don't have a choice, we have to do this, full stop, never true in leadership. Like, that's just, like, those are your warning signals. And there are real questions to be answered. Brené Brown has a beautiful series right now that I'm sure a lot of you are listening. Like, what does it mean to be pivoting into a world that invites us to function beyond human scale? Because that's literally the world of digital, the world of AI. It's beyond human scale. What an AI system can do, not a single human being on earth. You don't even come close. It's going to beat us every single time. And it can do it 24/7. It can do it across the world. It can do it, like, this is the world of beyond human scale. So what does it mean for us to be human? Or how do we operate in a way that still, you know, makes us happy and help us as me engage and realize our dreams in this world where technology is always confronting us? There absolutely is a place, but to think that we can just leave this to, I don't know, chance, like, this is a design moment. This is a choice moment, much more than a, in my view, much more than a quick to act moment.
I have a question which I'd like to pose to both of you, actually, which is, you've just segued into it beautifully, Valerie, which is, how will this technology transform us? What it already is, you know, even just through the you know, this sense, this just this sense of, like, the mystery of it, the immense potential, but also the threat, you know, it's already impacting us so deeply. But of course, that's going to continue to get more specific and proliferate in all these different ways. And I'm curious, you know, so do you feel that it will invite us even more deeply into our humanity? And Karim, you mentioned, you know, consciousness. That's something I'm thinking. Just a little kind of vignette is, like, my phone, yeah? And this gets back to the ethics that you mentioned, Valerie. So I've got my phone, and recently I'm like, man, I don't think I like having this phone. It's like, it's got a grip on me more than it ever had. And I know they design it to hijack my attention system. And I'm like, why is nobody taking them to court over that? If they've got these teams of scientists who are, you know, basically designing algorithms, which you can't win against, you know? So there's a lot in that, but my main question is, like, how will this technology transform us for the good, you know, and maybe even what could go wrong, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. On the good side, we're tipping into a world where it will soon be possible, with the intersection of AI and all these devices that are capturing data, that are getting data from our lives and then kind of analyzing and playing it back to us, right? So wearables would be a good example of this. So between the tech, like the physical tech that is kind of curious about what we're doing, how we're doing it, what we want, where we're going, what's happening, and then AI's capacity to analyze that and to do it in a personalized way. So my going through my day is different from your going through your day. We're tipping into a world of augmentation. So everything and anything we can imagine where we'd like the help of a super intelligent system, that's what's being developed right now. And again, if you're a nurse and you're facing a patient that has a complicated or a complex set of symptoms and you need to quickly figure out, like, that can be incredibly helpful and powerful. But to your point, like, where does it stop? What parts of my life do I prefer to not have augmented by a relationship with a system somewhere in a cloud and data about me, about my life, about my family, about my organization that is being captured and used in service to what I want, right? So that's certainly the kind of the potential of it. The flip side of that is it has a lot of potency. You can start crafting different versions of reality. So one of the things we're most afraid of, and that's already happening, is disinformation. But well beyond kind of just the video or the picture that goes viral, and then in the days and weeks that follow, you know, someone explains that that didn't really happen. It was a deep fake, right? Deep fake is baby versions of this. We're going to be in a world where we're all going to be experience our common experience, our shared experience differently. Now, that's already true today, but there are certain points of data that are same for everyone. But now, literally, we could have almost a customized, personalized version of the world. Yuval Harari wrote, by the way, he has a new book coming out this fall. I strongly recommend, although I have no clue what's in it, but he's one of the voices that needs to be heard right now. When ChatGPT came out a year and a half ago, his premise was language is the operating system of humankind. That's how we get things done in religion, in politics, in organizations, in families. And we've just built a system that understands our language almost more than us. It's able to predict what we mean, what we want, how to interact with us in a way that we're going to find helpful or engaging. So we've given the keys to the operating system of humankind to these systems that, by the way, we don't know how to control. So you can imagine a lot of ways where that could be used to steer us in a direction that serves a small group of individuals, certainly, but not all of us collectively. And that's where it becomes so critical that we have these conversations around guardrails, around legislation, around international collaboration. Humankind in the last decades has had many incredible scientific advances and discoveries that it chose to not use in certain ways, but to use in other ways, or, you know, to govern with certain limits and boundaries. And that's the conversation we need to be having about AI. It's a conversation I'm sure we will be able to kind of wrestle our way through. The challenge is scale and speed. This is going faster, bigger than anything we've had to wrestle with. Like space discovery is an example that something comes up. Like when we discovered we could go to space, you know, it could have been used to actually harm each other in a military way. And a lot of things happened. And there was great diplomacy, namely in the US and in Russia, to make sure that space was not used to serve a single nation's interest. It was used for all of our interests, right? So kind of the same spirit for AI, but you know, it took a while before, you know, you can't just like build a rocket ship and send it overnight. But think about how quickly GPT-4o right now is available to all of us. Like that's the scale and speed is so quick. That's the challenge. So see how we keep coming back to this. How do you actually slow down in a context where everything is speeding up? I think that would be an area of great curiosity for people who care about this.
I'm already touched by that. Because when I hear you talk about slowing down and to speed it up, it's equivalent to me for, you know, how do we return back to here and now, being aware and then being choiceful rather than the speed at which our usual operating system in our own minds works. So it kind of speaks to that, you know, I hope that invitation to us as humanity to do that more now because of the power and the influence that this vehicle of transformation has. I think the other thing for me, Joel, just on this very point, what gives me hope is the fact that this conversation is happening. You know, we've set up this conversation with Valerie because we know it's an important one. And the very conversation around AI, human, the importance of being conscious, I think that's a real hope for me around AI, is that these conversations always end up in the kind of the importance of being aware, conscious, leaderful, responsible. So it's almost like when I step back, I kind of go, that's really weird that this thing keeps coming up over and over again around responsibility and consciousness. So I wonder about the gift of that. On a more kind of practical note, some of the, you know, you talked about education, Valerie, because my daughter, she's using AI for some of her maths work, you know, and she then comes to me for, hey, I don't want to work, or I'm not motivated. So I'm noticing there's a little parallel there of, I've got some great AI that will help her with some of her challenges. Mm. You know, it has the best techniques of mathematics lessons in there. And then she'll come to me for the connection, for the motivation, for the, you know, for the relationship. So I wonder, is that what's going to continue to happen? Because there are so many gaps, you know, there's lots of things I'm seeing where people are recognizing there's so many gaps in the health service that we've got, you know, and if some of those gaps can be filled with AI, what does that mean for the opportunity for people to do their work in a more kind of connected, relational way? The downside is that, for me, around is the dependency of the relationship.
Yes.
And then, as you were saying earlier, Valerie, the potential, what the AI can do that we're not sure about, you know, the manipulative power of that by certain people who will use it in ways that aren't so great. And the one difference, because people go, well, look what we did with nuclear power, you know, we've got some nice policies around it that we're all aligned with, is it takes a lot to create a nuclear reactor.
Yes, so exactly.
Yeah. With AI, I could be doing it from my own bedroom, you know, and create something that could be quite scaled. So that's the bit that worries me around the manipulation. You know, I could get a phone call with a ChatGPT 4.0 version tomorrow, you know, mimicking my mother asking for money. So that's where I get, you know, or, you know, playing with my political viewpoints. And I, you know, again, it comes back to the same point, though. How do we be conscious around the creation of it and the governance around it and the alignment globally?
Yeah. This is when what you said about the relationship and the dependency of the relationship. So Joel, a few minutes ago, you were talking about this world of social media and digitization that we've kind of all accepted to be a part of, competes for attention. The world we're going into, it's from attention to intimacy. It has it's a relationship. It's not just I go there, I'm fed. It's we relate to each other. And even the old version of ChatGPT, I can't believe I'm saying that, but for me personally, it was hard to ask a query the same way I ask a query to Google search. I go to Google search, I don't feel the need to be polite. I just go brown shoes, women, size 8, right? And then it gives me whatever. But in interacting with these systems, have you felt that? It's the felt sense of it, right? I'm like, hey, hi. The demos, they do that all the time. Also, hey, hi, GPT, how are you doing today? Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Can I ask you something? Why on earth are we all of a sudden like self-conscious about the quality of our relationship with this system that in essence is designed only to, you know, scan all of the internet, everything we've ever produced, and then give us an answer, hopefully without saying stupid stuff or hallucinating. So move that forward. Today, there are already websites that provide intimate relationships through AI chatbots, and people are having really extreme reactions to those relationships. They know it's a chatbot. They know it's not a human being, but they feel the same level of attachment and go into mourning if something happens to that relationship. So as a quick side note, one of these websites changed the visuals of the avatars because they were criticized. They were a bit too funky and they did something a bit more neutral. On the receiving end of that, the human beings who were in a relationship with an avatar felt as if someone had physically harmed the person they cared about. That's how they experienced it inside them, even though in their rational mind, it's an avatar. It's a 2D avatar. It's not even a 3D avatar yet. Snapchat deployed on all of our kids' iPhones without asking any parental consent to anyone, my AI friend. And so today our kids, if they want to, mine know that they can't, but they can go in the morning and instead of asking their sister, their brother, a real friend that actually has a physical body or their parent, hey, what's up today? I'm nervous. I have a football game. I don't, you know, they ask the AI. And I can imagine a world where that could be helpful if really well thought through and kind of with human supervision of well-intentioned adults who are trying, for example, to help a child develop social skills. But I call, like, why the hell does Snapchat want our kids to interact with an AI system? Like, what does it gain from that? That's that, and that's the part that comes back to accountability. When did we create a world where these companies can just deploy these technologies on our phones and we don't have a say in it. And then it's easy to say, I don't want my phone anymore. You won't be able to do your job anymore. Like no one will know how to reach you. Like how would that even happen? My husband had that reaction a while ago. He's like, I'm not doing the phone thing anymore. I'm like, cool, okay. So when you pick up your girls at school, how will you know where they are? And how is everything going through me? Like, how does that even, how would you even start to operate in the real world without these technologies? So that's why I mean, we're really at a point of design and choice before we tip into the next level of potential of how we could be relating or not with them.
I think this has the potential to break the internet. You know, imagine if you know, at least social media, if everything on social media is generated, it's not real, it's fake, it's generated by AI. So you can't trust anymore. I'm already seeing that on my feeds, you know, deep fake of celebrities saying things. And, you know, it's like, whoa, that's a bit weird. Why would they say that? You know, but is it already super realistic? So at some point, you know, it will just be like, well, what? Well, I don't know how that will be. Will it, you know, but I'm imagining I might be like, well, why would I go there? Because it's all just made up, you know, or what's true? So that's what I mean by break the internet. And I wonder, this question we're in right now is, you know, I can feel my visceral response to it. It's like, ooh, what is the potential? You know, let me get to the heart of the question around coaching. Like, I think a lot of coaches feel fear around, hey, is this going to replace my work? You know, and if so, how much? You know, I mean, in a way, it's a specific version of that question we're talking about. How much will this start to replace human interaction? I spoke with someone who was creating like an AI mindfulness kind of personal development app. And, you know, he's a great guy, but he was like, his belief was like, look, Joel, humans can't interact with each other anyway. Have you seen the state of the world and how humans interact? Mm-hmm. This is better. Like, interacting with my AI app makes people feel better, you know? And I was like, whoa, just let's slow down a moment. So what do you feel, how far do you think this could go with how AI could replace things like coaching? Like, Or where would it excel and where might it really fall short? Yeah.
It's going to excel at making us feel good, for sure. It's been trained on trillions of transcripts of what we care about. Poems, books, social media sites, annual reports. So it's going to figure out what you want to hear, how you want to engage, and it's going to be very good at giving you that, for sure. And it's probably going to be very good at what I'd call like level one coaching, or just like, hey, you know, I'm trying to have this conversation about something relatively simple or maybe a bit complicated, but it's really not complex, with my spouse or my colleague. Like, give me a bit of a framework for how I should do this. And, you know, it would say, well, start by saying how you're feeling, you know, reference the events, say how it made you feel, and then, you know, explain why that's not good, and then make a it'll like that kind of level one, the same level you'd get by reading a book, by the way, right? It's very similar. It'll give you that, right? It'll never be able to do what the beautiful craft of leadership really is about, which is so much wider and deeper, which goes back to roots and ancestries and, you know, projects into kind of good intent for our collective future that honors everything that every single individual is, but also appreciate how that comes into a broader community and life experience, and really helps you as an individual not just do the conversation in this case, but actually feel it, sit with it, grow from it, be transformed by it. I don't think tech will ever, it doesn't feel energy, it doesn't feel emotion, it doesn't care it optimizes for the quality of the engagement and the you know, your satisfaction with it. So when you were talking, Joel, part of me was like, yeah, this is the fight we're in. You know, some people will go for the AI generated version of self-improvement or being on the path of being a, you know, a good human being. By the way, a lot of people who are developing tech today do think they're doing a service to humanity because we're deeply flawed. They just forget that the tech will also be deeply flawed, but they do believe they're serving us by doing this. And then the work that you do every day, the work that everyone who's listening today does every day, like that's why I think this craft, this art, this devotion, we're going to need more of it, which de facto, I think more people will step into it, but it's going to have to learn to interact with, it might not be able to compete. Some people will have to go there and maybe they'll come back, but there we'll need more of this. We'll need more of how do we invest in being the best version we can of the super limited flawed human beings we are, in service of our own happiness on Earth and the happiness of the generations to come. Who cares about how AI feels 120 years from now? I care about my grandkids. I don't care about AI.
So what I hear, Valerie, is be really good at the doing, the fixing, the giving us what we need, but not the space of the being, the relationship. You use the word intimacy, which really kind of landed for me. I wonder if this is a wake-up call to the importance of both. And I really hear some people will go in one direction and others in another, but hopefully there's another choice point that comes to us and, you know, with bells on in this moment around that. I have a question just from that. I gauge that you don't think, you know, AGI, so artificial general intelligence, will mean AI will become conscious in any way. But so I'm sensing that's what your belief, but I want to check if that's true, because that also links back to, you know, presence, intimacy, connection. You know, will AI, if, you know, when it hits that point where it's generally intelligent, you know, will it be able to mimic and even be at the same time? Just your view on that.
Mimic, yes. There are already versions of interactions with GPT and others that have led to these kinds of surprising insights or answers from the system. So what I said was, I don't think it will care. I don't think it will want to be loved the way we want to be loved. I don't think it will have a kind of implicit motivation of self-realization, but it will be laser sharp good at achieving its goals. And once it has agency, so once it can interact with the real world, for example, because it's able to go to the internet and maybe open social media accounts or open a bank account, whatever. If it has agency in the world, if it can interact with humans that give it agency, that becomes very dangerous, because then it's a goal plus agency. Right now, it's not that. It has goals, but it doesn't have agency yet. And even the goals are relatively contained. ChatGPT is a chatbot. That's all it is for now, right? But as we pivot into more and more of capabilities, that's the thing to keep an eye on. And you have to imagine that it's going to be getting more and more agency. Like just this week, I think Microsoft announced, was it Microsoft or Google? Now I have a blank. It was Google. That, you know, no, it's Microsoft. They're going to integrate AI into, like, if you want, you can buy a laptop that's going to have all AI integrated. So it's basically going to be like, it's going to know everything I did. So it's going to know me. It's going to know where I shop, what I like. It's going to know this conversation. It's going to have heard it. And it's super practical, because I can say, hey, can you go back to the conversation I was having the other day and remind me, what are the two books I said we should read? Because I don't remember anymore, right? Or can you go back to the email I sent 3 months ago? And like, it's going to be this kind of interactive personal assistant, but it's also going to have a lot of agency in terms of how I interface with people. It's going to possibly write emails for me, possibly, you know, oh, just go buy this stuff for me. You know better than I what I want, right? That's where the next slippery slope lies. But all this to say, if you go back to the lens of what most wise people say being human is really about, which is this desire to be in connection, to love, to grow, to belong, Yeah, no, I don't see how AI could have that.
That kind of links to coming back to the coaching question, which is, you know, for us to ask myself where should coaches follow their attention? It is around growing in that capacity, those capacities to relate, to love, to connect. Because I think from there, and certainly, you know, we in our own program of Reimagine Leadership, we're actually going to bring in the word love into that. But that space that gets created that is so in service to relationship, to the other's growth, you know, that, and my sense is that's where coaches can hopefully have more space and time, you know, with the support and the complementarity of AI, you know, and maybe that's where the focus is for coaches and leaders to tune into that, those capacities, because those are the very things I think that actually do answer the bigger questions of what's the right thing to do, what's the good thing to do, and what are the right choices to make. So I'm wondering, yeah, any other thoughts on that, Valerie and Joel? I know you've been thinking about this as well, but the sense of what's our responsibility is to tune into those capacities that we have, that AI at the moment and hopefully never be able to touch. But they're the very things we need to take us through these times.
Yeah, I don't know what I could add to that. It's the it maybe comes back to the slowing down, to the shifting perspectives. AI is built on everything we've been and known and discovered up to now, but this transition is about who we want to be, become, create for the future. So it needs us to work together and come together in the way that, yes, is informed by the past, but really is more emergent into what do we want? Who are we? How does this shift how we think about our organization, our community, our church, whatever it is that we're engaging with? That I think is the beauty of the coaching relationship. And I do think, to come back to what I said earlier on, I do think it's going to be a difficult time for leaders. They're going to be really compelled to be in this sphere of conviction and decision and action and winning, and have no clue. They're the first generation of leaders, and we are the generation of leaders who 50 years from now, people will look back and say, you were the guys, you were the gals, you were the people who were, you know, in these decision-making positions when AI came to the world. And this is where we are 50 years from now.
Yeah. And I just to build on that, my sense is that it will invite people into, as I see happening with my clients and as you're naming, Valerie, just this deeper question around what is it to be human?
Yes.
What do I care about? Just this huge ethical consideration we're inside of globally right now around this arising because of AI and, you know, as many other kind of systems and institutions are, you know, disintegrating, you know, or no longer sufficient to enable us to navigate these times. I think these deeper questions are getting like at the forefront and center. So my sense is it like collectively is going to, yeah, invite us more deeply into this question of what is it to be human? What is it to be of value? You know, what is like, actually it will invite us into like exploring what is value in our life, mm-hmm. like the true, the good and the beautiful. I think, and this is just my thinking and I've been influenced by others, but it will invite us out of, you know, what you've named and what we've both named is this, like, there's this tendency towards like now more faster, like competition, getting ahead. And I think there'll be an end game in that, or, you know, it's like a race to the bottom. And so like we in the check-in, Valerie, like I notice I'm really, really passionate or really drawn to like the simple, beautiful things in life, like disconnecting from technology, being with my family, being in the sun, as you said, being around trees, what, just friendship. And with that also, this is my own passion, but I see this in other people, almost like a disidentification from the kind of rational modern mindset, which can lead us down that path of analysis and improvement all the time, which has brought so many beautiful things. So it's a great thing, but it was like we've overprivileged that. And it feels like the technology of AI is maybe being born out of that mindset more, or can almost speed it up. So it's like, actually, what is it to kind of grow bigger than that and find like peace or enjoyment, engagement in this present moment through presence? So like that is, it's like a cooking pot, you know, it's like,
yes,
and everything's heating up. And it's difficult. It's challenging. Like Sam Altman said, like, this is going to be painful. It's going to be a bit scary. But the potential for beautiful things is also there. So yeah, that's a little bit of how I respond to that question.
As you were speaking, I could feel myself expand and then kind of the anxiety from some of the topics we talked about go down and okay. Feeling I can show up for this moment. And, you know, the coaching relationship sometimes is just that nudge or that permission to, you know, the invitation of, for example, friendship, nature, time away from tech, or the invitation of leading management conversations where you're not trying to solve, you're just trying to discuss, debate, right? How to bring more, create more safe space for looking at the complexity of AI coming into our lives, instead of, you know, feeling like we have to do it the way we've been successful doing it up to now, which is, you know, analyze it, solve for it, make a bold decision, act, follow through. And I think that's, at least to me in my coaching relationship, it's often that moment of, oh yeah, you said tree. And I went like, yeah, that's yes. Or you're right. I could spend 3 hours with my executive team and we could just talk about this. Like, just put it all on the table. Wow, that's exactly what we need next. Just helping to step back from the, because the, with everything going faster and this kind of shortening of timeframes, see how you go tunnel vision and it's the expansion. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Is it, I just want to name the parallel here, because what you said between you two really touched me. Just the conversation and the dialogue we're having now has kind of lifted or shifted the anxiety and we come back into ourselves. And that's a real parallel of the invitation to others, is just, you know, step into the conversation, connect to yourselves, to each other. And that's, there's the opportunity to come back and then hopefully come into the world again from a different lens, different perspective. I'm wondering, Joel, if this feels like a kind of natural point to come to the end, if we ask the little question, because it's a really appropriate question. So we're going to play with this experiment of also bringing in AI into this by asking an AI for a question for Valerie. So I've asked AI, what's a good question for Valerie to end with in a podcast? Thought it'd be a nice way of embracing AI into this. So Valerie, if you're ready, here's the question. It's quite relevant, actually. So some kind of synchronicity there. So what's your vision for human AI collaboration in coaching that you'd like to see? And then on the back of that, what's your advice to coaches, consultants, leaders? No simple question there, by the way.
I don't know that I have a vision. Everything is still a bit too blurred for me to feel there's clarity here. I've said this a few times, so I'll say it again. I have a growing conviction that one of the key pieces of the puzzle for this to serve us collectively and for us to really reap the benefits of this beautiful innovation as an advancement for all of us is more of this, is more of these kinds of conversations. And if we wanted to, you know, put language around it, what you just said, Joel, like just greater clarity and ownership of what it really means to be human, owning that space and then making choices about how we're going to interact with the technology. And, you know, coaching as a field is going to have to wrestle with that, as will almost any other field, sector, industry we could think about. My advice right now is just more of this, right? This, as I said, I think we have a you know, 1 to 2 year window ahead of us before the next big step. And like, it's very dangerous to put timelines right now, but where we should be engaging, we should be carving space to interact with the technology, we should be figuring out what this means for me, for us, for whatever project or organization I'm dedicated to. It really is the time to start building our capacity and our agency. Like we absolutely have a right to judge the moment we're in, and we have the responsibility. We're the ones who are going to make these choices, who are going to adopt the technologies or not, who are going to vote for the world leaders who will, you know, go steer us left or steer us right, as per for climate change, for example. So I think my piece of advice for coaches, as for leaders, is like, this is big enough that it merits its own space and an intention in building the relationship to it. And if more good-hearted, well-intentioned, dedicated people do that, it's the beginning of the counterbalance that we need to slow things down, or at least meet the moment we're in.
That's really beautiful. Do you have, could you recommend, so that's a beautiful like invitation. I'm wondering if you know of places where that conversation is taking place, or resources where people might be able to tune into. In a sense, it feels like there's a call to be for this to be I want to say a movement, but you know, like, yeah, to participate, and the more that people can connect and tap into other resources, I think the stronger that response will be. Yeah.
So I think what you're doing is part of the answer to this. And I'm super encouraged to see more and more of the kinds of people who bring people together, putting AI as a topic on the agenda, right? So certainly if you're a convener of people, a convener of minds and hearts, saying, okay, how can I use my convening power to facilitate these conversations? There's not a single place right now that is kind of coming out as the place to be turning attention to. As I mentioned before, a lot of you know, great spirits who are engaged in the conversation about what it means to be human, like Brené Brown, are pivoting part of their work and curiosity towards this topic. So anything that kind of resonates right now is a good one to say, okay, maybe I want to go there for a while and see where that leads me. This is one that I'm following right now. More tactically, not specific to coaches, personally, I find the Financial Times has the most rounded 360 view. So if the goal is to just be aware of what's happening and be given invitations to follow different threads, the Financial Times is the one place that has the roundest view. So kind of the fast food of what's happening in AI. And then I mentioned Yuval Harari, certainly as someone to keep an eye on. And there's for those of you who like to go back to go forward, a beautiful book by a New York Times journalist called Kate Metz called Genius Makers, that tells the history of how we got to where we are today. And again, to meet the moment we're at, sometimes it helps to understand kind of where we're coming from, the origins of it, the roots of it. And it reads really nicely. And again, I think it helps to kind of position ourselves in the timeline of what's emerging, what's happening.
Yeah, beautiful. It feels like we're kind of naturally drawing to a close here. So I don't know if you want to ask anything else, Karim, or?
No, that feels right. I'm just noticing myself feeling complete as well, and in a really good space to reflect now on some of those things you've said, Valerie, around, you know, what is our responsibility and how do I tune in, be participating, committed, etc. So yeah, it's a really good space for me. Thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation. Wow.
Same. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just want to thank both of you, particularly you, Valerie, for coming and joining us. And feel very touched by what we've explored today. And so, yeah, do you want to, I mean, normally we were talking to people who are more like in the world of coaching. So we'd like, where can we find out more about your work? But I still think that's a really relevant invitation. Where can we find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so you can easily find Mila on the internet. So Mila, We're in Montreal, Quebec, so that might help. And then Professor Yasha Benjo, that I mentioned a few times, really is one of the world leaders right now, engaging a lot with organizations, with governments, with the media. So he might be someone to keep an eye on. And, you know, part of my role as CEO of Mila is really to hold space for him and make sure that his message is heard and that we're doing some of the behind the scenes diplomacy work so that he can, you know, advance the agenda of AI for good, if we wanted to name it that way. But yeah, he's someone worth keeping an eye on. Yep.
Great. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.